just hard to see somebody passing in front of your eyes.
Tired of the pandemic? So are we. It's Tuesday, November 24th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, social media disinformation, tepid transition, and a special Thanksgiving pardon. It's all on today's VOA Asia. We're closing in on a year with a viral pandemic that has affected more than 47 million people around the world and has claimed the lives of more than 1 million, according to the World Health Organization. As VOA's Carol Pearson reports, people are now suffering from what is being called pandemic fatigue.
Throughout the world, people are tired of this pandemic, tired of wearing masks, tired of practicing social distancing, and health workers are tired too. Howard Catton is with the International Council of Nurses.
We're extremely concerned about the mental health impacts on nurses.
Nurses and other health workers stay with the dying when no one else can.
It's just hard to see somebody passing in front of your eyes.
Health workers have been putting in long hours since the beginning of the pandemic when people cheered their heroics. And now there's another spike. As the pandemic continues, people are having difficulty maintaining safe habits. That's because over time, as we adjust to a threat and stress levels drop, it's natural to let our guard down. But it's important to remember that while we may take a break on safety measures, COVID-19 doesn't. It keeps infecting people at markets, at demonstrations. COVID doesn't care about the cause or political affiliation. The World Health Organization urges global leaders to acknowledge the hardships people are facing. Dr. Ngozi Ezika is the top doctor in the state of Illinois.
I understand how pandemic fatigue is striking everyone. It's real. People are tired of not seeing their families. The way we work, the way we live, the way we play has all changed. And the harsh reality is that the sacrifices we've made and that we continue to make do not have a future expiration date.
Even with a vaccine on the horizon, experts say the only way to fight fatigue is with stamina. Dr. Scott B. is a psychologist with the Cleveland Clinic.
I call it willingness. Willingness to do uncomfortable things because we value them and deem them worthwhile, and they protect ourselves and those that we care about.
Experts recommend making safety measures like hand washing a habit. People can also reduce the risk while doing the things that make them happy.
Finding a new mask, something that excites you, a new social distancing activity, finding something novel and new is a way we excite our brains, and it's a way we can overcome fatigue.
Experts say if people are asked to be part of the solution, they'll cooperate more. It's worked to end other pandemics. It can work in this one. And someday the pandemic will end. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit our website, voanews.com. Australia lifts COVID-19 border closures between two states. A report says Afghan war has killed or maimed over 26,000 children. Three Hong Kong prominent pro-democracy activists in custody. Rights experts say Japan was wrong to detain Carlos Ghosn. Biden and New Zealand's Ardern discuss COVID-19 and other issues in congratulatory call. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found online at Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. With election-related emotions running high in the United States, Twitter, Facebook, and other internet firms are trying different ways to address misinformation on their sites. Michelle Quinn tells us more.
As the United States grapples with the results of Election Day, an online battle has been taking place on Twitter, Facebook, and sites like LinkedIn over information, some say misinformation, about the election and its results. There are a lot of stories out there.
False claims about voter fraud. We're seeing a lot of just a flood of such claims. Calls to violence or calls to protest or calls to speak, you know, fight conspiracies that are just not real. And that is dangerous. It's a democratic emergency. And we're terrified about these false claims further polarizing the American people and leading to a collapse in trust in our institutions.
Twitter is trying to stop the spread of misinformation by labeling some tweets and preventing their ability to spread. Facebook is labeling posts and pointing users to its election site. On Thursday, it removed a Stop the Steal group used to organize protests against vote counting. Google-owned YouTube is posting a label on some videos, but leaving up some, making claims that appear to violate its policy. Misinformation about the vote count is also being posted in Spanish on Twitter and Facebook. One Spanish language theme was that President Donald Trump is being robando, or robbed, of a win in the election. These steps signal a new willingness by internet firms to step into the maelstrom of facts and misinformation, even when prominent people are speaking. Efforts like these are crucial for citizens to trust the final election results, according to experts.
The more we can tamp down these disinformation and misinformation campaigns hitting Americans so that we can believe that the system is actually working for us. Because at the end of the day, we're the ones who own the system. We're a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And so we deserve some level of transparency here.
Despite these steps, some feel internet firms should be doing more, such as retroactive corrections.
For everyone who has liked or engaged or seen the piece of misinformation before Facebook puts a label on it, they should send them a correction saying, sorry, we have, through our fact checkers, detected that this is false.
One thing is clear. As Americans await final results, the internet sites will continue to be ripe ecosystems for real and fake information. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, U.S. National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien was in Manila Monday, where he welcomed continued cooperation on countering Islamic State and backed the Philippines over disputes in the South China Sea. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us today on VOA Asia. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden is reported to have selected one of his closest foreign affairs advisors, Antony Blinken, to be Secretary of State in his new administration, as the projected winner of the U.S. election appears set to re-engage the United States in an array of global alliances that President Donald Trump had abandoned. The 58-year-old Blinken is a veteran of U.S. foreign affairs decision-making for two decades, and according to multiple news accounts, agrees with Biden on the need for the United States to play a leading role again in world affairs. With U.S. President Donald Trump still disputing the results of the November 3rd election, there is little communication between the Trump administration and the incoming Biden team, including on the nation's response to COVID-19. Michelle Quinn tells us more.
President-elect Joe Biden continues to move toward taking the helm of the U.S. on January 20 and is expected this week to announce some of his cabinet members. But frustration is mounting among Democrats over the lack of communication with the White House as President Donald Trump disputes the election results. One key issue is the nation's response to COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus.
Our transition isn't getting access to agency officials to help develop our plans. And there's a lot of focus on that vaccine rollout plan that's going to be critical in the early days of a Biden presidency. We have no access to that.
Figuring out a nationwide plan for vaccination distribution is now a top priority. Drug makers Moderna and Pfizer reported last week that trials of the coronavirus vaccines showed them to be more than 90% effective. Pfizer applied for emergency authorization in the United States, and Moderna said it would do so as well. The Trump team is ready to ship vaccines within 24 hours of approval, said Dr. Moncef Slaoui, chief science advisor to the Trump administration's vaccine development program. But Slaoui added he worries that misinformation may cause some Americans to be reluctant about getting vaccinated.
I'm very, very concerned about the hesitancy as it exists, and I think it's very unfortunate because this has been exacerbated by the political context under which we have worked very hard with the companies and with the thousands of people that have been involved to make these vaccines available.
The U.S. has had more than 12 million COVID-19 cases and 256,000 deaths, according to the latest figures from the Johns Hopkins University. How the ongoing political drama will affect the vaccination response remains to be seen. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
In one of the more unusual American traditions, every year just before the Thanksgiving Day holiday, a turkey is spared from becoming a family dinner by being pardoned by the sitting U.S. president. This annual presidential tradition has a long history, as Jacopo Luzzi reports.
The American Thanksgiving dinner revolves around turkey, a bird indigenous to North America that was eaten by the first colonists. The tradition of a presidential pardon of a turkey dates back decades. The first ever recorded turkey pardoning was by President Abraham Lincoln, whose son Ted asked him not to eat the turkey that was given to the president. But it didn't become a tradition until more modern times. President John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and Richard Nixon only extended pardons to turkey from time to time. It was only during the administration of President George Bush Sr. in 1989 that the ceremony became an annual event.
After all, this turkey represents America's 45 million turkeys who will begin making their irreplaceable contribution to our Thanksgiving celebration. So take it easy, turkey. We're just here to serve you.
The selection of birds takes several months, a process conducted by the National Turkey Foundation. Two are ultimately chosen, one for the ceremony in the White House Rose Garden and the other as a reserve. Bird names are chosen by elementary school children. Most presidents use the ceremony as an opportunity to have some fun.
Time flies, even if turkeys don't.
That was good.
I thought it was pretty good. You think it's funny too, don't you?
On the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, the turkeys are driven to a hotel in downtown Washington, the W Hotel. They're in a suite. They are fed corn and blueberries and prepare for a photo shoot on the roof. After that, it's off to the White House.
Butter, I wish you a lot of luck, but I hereby grant you a full and complete pardon.
After the ceremony, the pardon birds spend the rest of their lives at the Virginia Polytechnic Institute. Jacopo Luzzi, VOA News, Washington.
We do not yet know the fate of the turkey pardon event this year, as President Trump's public schedule was not known beyond Monday at the time of this program. It is a near certainty the tradition will continue under the Biden administration next year. That's our program for today. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, all at VOA Asia. You'll also find us online on Instagram and YouTube. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today, and we thank those who help bring this program to you every day. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.